right. Welcome back to episode 15 of the Slide In Podcast. I'm Braden Anderson alongside Kelly Gallup. And today's show is brought to you once again by our online business. Go support us. We got tons of new Fulling Mill materials online. Go check it out.
We've got to talk about that.
We've got a couple here if you want to just hold them up for the camera. Some just hold
dubbing brushes.
Up. Yeah,
we got
brushes.
Bajillions of those in.
Do you suck at deer hair? Try dubbing brushes.
That should be the yes.
I should start writing these sales.
Yeah,
pages.
That one.
I started doing a lot of brushes because I
sucked at hair.
Yeah, well, I was okay at it, but it was a time thing.
Loser.
I like to tie quick.
Yeah, well,
couldn't get past that, so I gave up.
I, on the other hand, am kind of a newbie with this brush stuff.
So, we're wearing new clothes, so there's a facade that we are filming on a different day. Facade's a big word, you know what that means? I'm still flying without a laptop, flying blind. Thanks, Apple. Your support was really helpful. I would say nicer to the second person.
But you only got to talk to him for 10 seconds.
Well, you were at lunch. I was on with him for a while.
Yeah,
they're telling me I need to go to Rexburg to get my screen fixed. What do you think that is, about a four-hour drive from...
Rexburg. No, from here?
No, from Bozeman.
Oh, three.
Yeah.
Take off from right now.
Whiny baby. I got problems. We'll figure it out. Try to get this podcast up. How's your shoulder doing? Did you see all the YouTube doctors?
One guy wrote in this... I just ordered the book.
Really?
But I went to a chiropractor. My back was killing me, and I went in there and I told her about my shoulder, blah, blah, blah. And she did this deep tissue thing and gave me two stretches and almost overnight.
Fixed, huh?
Yeah.
I need some of that.
It seemed like a nerve thing because I'm sitting, like, I can't tie.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here and all of a sudden, ugh, there it goes, right? But since I went in and, I mean, I knew it wasn't it had to be some nerve thing because it's, I can do anything I want. I can do anything, so... But thanks for all the support. I got a lot of, forget the one guy's name. He says he was 7 years my senior. We have to look him up and see who he is. And he says, I'm 7 years your senior. It was just came in this morning. He says, I'm just telling you, get used to it.
Yeah. What do you say? There's going to be a new hip, shoulder or something every year.
By the way, I'm 10 surgeries in and I already have the knee. So.
Let's see. I got to find this guy. I'd love to give him a shout out.
Yeah, it was good. It was just today, wasn't it?
Yes, I'm not looking at
anything. So thanks for all the people that wrote in for your unbelievable support. Wah, wah, wah would have been summing it all up. You're a baby, quit whining.
If we have more YouTube doctors, I've got a serious case of huck neck and...
Learn to land on your skis better.
That's that'd be a better idea. That'd My left arm's all jacked up. It doesn't work.
Wah, wah, wah.
All right, well, let's get into it. So in our last show, you talked about a woman who fished the bighorn a lot,
mm-hmm.
who caught all these giant fish, and you thought she was playing a prank on
Skinny.
By mm-hmm. saying that she couldn't cast. And it reminded me of one of the funniest pranks I witnessed while working in the shop, and I wish I could remember this woman's name. She was an absolute riot. I'm sure you'd remember her, but she's one of Star's longtime clients. And she calls in, she said, I want to book.
Oh.
You remember this gal?
Yep.
She said she wanted to book a morning half day with Star, but she didn't want Star to know it was her. So she said, tell Star it's a overweight lesbian couple from San Francisco that are gluten-free, dairy-free, vegetarian, allergic to nuts. Basically every dietary restriction you say. And, you know, doesn't like cursing in the boat, and one of them has a bladder problem. So
No smoking, no cursing.
Yeah, no smoke. All this stuff, right?
Everything she could find.
Lays out all these different clauses, and then you know, waited. You know, I remember I called Star. I'm like, hey, Star, I'm sorry, man. This is like they requested you. This is kind of a weird one. So, oh man. What is this going to be like? In very few words,
right.
as Star does.
As Star.
And then, you know, Star shows up and she kind of jumps out from behind the vehicle. It's just great. Then she gave me the rest of
her. Yeah, but he also, I think he'd already figured it out was her.
I don't know. I feel like it was.
I think he had just put
He it. Must have had some spidey sense or something. But yeah, she was an absolute hoot. So on that note, do you remember... any pranks, any kind of funny moments in fly shops, anything like that that you think our listeners might enjoy hearing?
Not from the client perspective. I mean, not really in the shops. I mean, I used to carry a gag bag on my boat. That was solely for my entertainment. I carried a plethora of feminine products with me. Very seldom did we have gals back in the day. But I had a lot of guys, like we just got done talking about, whining about all their shit's wrong with them. They're like a giant 40 years old or something, right? So I had a boat made, and I had toggle switches. If anybody, this is great if you want to mess with your clients. I had a toggle switch. It was that big. It had four things on it. It was a piece of Velcro and hooked to the side of my boat. And it had sun, rain, wind, good bite, bad bite. And so I would start with them up always. And it says on, off, on, above all of them, right? I had the trophy trolley in Traverse City make me this little plaque thing up, and just said what it was. Somebody'd start whining about the wind. I said, oh, shit, sorry, man. I'd reach over and I'd click that button and just stare at him. And he always got the same answer that, you know, something about you. And then in the bag, I had tampons and minis and itch relief, all kind of. But one time I found this giant tube in a gas station. I don't know why. It looked like bearing grease. And it was Vagisil. And I bought this thing the second I saw it. Right? Oh, and I had bullshit repellent.
Nice.
And had a blue, it was, you know, anti-bullshit. Bullshit repellent repels all forms of bullshit. And it was on and on. And I had this little bag, and I just kept it in my boat. And I guided this guy from the NFL. His name was Doug. Huge man. And we, I mean, just giant. It's just him in the boat, thank God. Because going down the river, it was like, phew. I think he was a linebacker. Yeah. Can't remember. But, I mean, I was 230 probably. And I'm just digging taters, man. It's like, holy shit, I can't move my seat back anymore. I need something. I had to put rocks in the back. And we were fishing at around the PM. And we're going down to Beer Bottle Bend. And we've been talking, and because obviously I'm all pumped up, and we're talking lifting and injuries. Like, guys love to talk injuries. Mm-hmm. And so everything, you know, all this and that. And, of course, this guy's like, I don't know, he's got to be 6'6", probably, shit, 340 maybe. I don't know. He's huge, 300. He was giant, just absolute massive human. His forearms, he couldn't do this. His forearms wouldn't roll up.
It's too big.
It'd be like, I can't get this damn shirt on. We were fishing, I think we were fishing trout. I don't remember. I think it seems like it was fall. We might have been salmon, and maybe we were going along. And we used to do a lot of picking beds where we'd get behind the beds and we would nymph the runs behind them for the browns. They'd line up sometimes 20, 30 yards below these spawning, get a big spawning bed for the salmon. And these trout would just line up on it, just eating caddisfly. I mean, they're digging the beds. You get a complex set of beds where you got 6-8 pairs work in the same zone. Mm-hmm. It's just staggering how many insects are floating below that because they're digging them up. And of course the eggs, because they use multiple bedding zones. And so we would do that a lot too. I just can't remember what we were actually fishing. But anyway, we get down there and we've been fishing hard, yeah. Right? And that's another thing about guiding. We were talking about that last show, but putting expectations on your client. And, you know, everybody thinks they can just go fish, you know. It's hard to fish straight in the front of a boat for 8 hours. I mean, virtually impossible.
Yeah.
First time I did it was at the One Fly. I remember how my shoulder was killing me. I mean, I never thought about it, that you're sitting up there, and yet I'm the guy in the back of the boat yelling at Nancy Shealy, who's 78 years old. Come on, Nancy, give me one for the kids in the hospital. You know, come on. You know. And she, oh, my arm hurts. And it's like, at any rate, Doug goes by, and he gets out of the boat, and I see him like doing this. And I'm like, oh, Golden. Because he's the first guy that's going to get the badge. So, and I said, and I'm making lunch, right? That's back in the days when we were still grilling and doing shit like that. And so I get this giant tube and I walk, I didn't walk close. I get like 20 feet from him. See her, you know, shoulder bugging you? And he said, yeah, man. He says, I don't know. It's kind of, I said, man, whenever that happens to me, I just use this. And I threw him that thing, a badge. And I took, and I did my best attempt at a 540. And I just ran. And all I hear, it's got a voice like this, you know. All I hear is, you little son of a bitch. He didn't chase me, thank God. He would have caught me in two steps. And I wait a minute. I go, coast clear. Yeah, come on in. And he's the one that brought it to my attention because he throws it at me. Yeah. And he goes, yeah, whatever, nice, and something like that. And he goes, when's the last time you fished for 6 hours straight? And I thought, well, I've never done it in my life. We never go fish that long. It's you and me in the boat. I'm not going to sit in the, you know, I row for 6 hours. I'm got Johnny, but I mean, you're not, we never get to fish.
No.
But I mean, not as groups, you come and go, but if you get a single client in front of that boat, I mean, 8 hours, you know, then the cast starts to go, you know, that's another expectations thing we were talking about last week, was that people's wheels fall off their wagon about 2:30.
Yeah.
You know, they eat lunch, they go and...
They don't get there 13 minutes.
They don't get even with it. I don't think it would help them. I mean... It's tough. It's tough to do that. So prank wise, I did that constantly in my boat, but not to, I think that the one on Star is about the only one I've ever, that was an elaborate setup. She must've thought about that for a while. Although if you know her, she thinks
I bet it
like,
was
that
like that
instantly.
Yeah, I bet she just said it was on a whim, yeah, call and go, I have to tell Star this.
She probably does it to every grade she's got.
Gosh,
but, I don't really see other than that. Johnny's done a few. I've in the boat, you know, I had the new cooler set up on my boat once. And every time I'd get halfway down, I go, shit, where's my cooler? And everybody's like, what? And like, oh, crap. It's like 1 o'clock. Oh, because I was sitting on it because we didn't do that back then, right? And had this boat built in. So it had the, kind of like my fly pod, it was the original one of those where it was all flat, except my cooler sat down in on it. I do that to all of them. Oh, crap. Some of them are pretty into their lunch.
Yeah, some people like to eat.
Yeah.
Some more than others.
Yes.
But sounds like
that's about it.
Sounds like the fella you had in the front of the boat that day liked to eat.
Oh, yeah, that guy that I rode off. Oh, you mean the big guy?
The big guy.
No, that guy was born about as big as you.
That guy's a professional.
Yeah, he was about your size when he was born.
Jesus.
He was, huge. I mean, the guy.
Very tall, very tall.
He's probably 6'6", I think, something like that.
I was.
But, man, what a giant. But I don't remember too many. I remember Ray Schmidt doing, well, I talked about him last week. Ray Schmidt showed up on the river one time with a suit and tie on.
No way.
Oh, yeah.
That's great.
And I'm like, are you, because it was always something with this guy. He was funnier than shit, still is. And I says, do I even have, why, I don't even know why, okay, why? He goes, the fish aren't respecting me. So I'm trying something different. He's got his waders on, he's got shirt, tie, and a jacket.
That's awesome. Oh, that's so good.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think of other ones I've heard. The Danny Morrell one, I remember it was the first time I met him. We were just right over by the counter over there, and he was telling us this story. I can't remember how it came up, but he said he had this woman in his raft. Husband's in the back, woman's in the front. And it had one of those lean bars that's kind of diagonal and wraps around you.
Yeah.
And she gets in the boat and she goes, "What's this thing for?" And he goes, "Steers the boat. Pull up to go right, push down to go left." And he says he's got her, you know, the first 250 yards, she's pulling up and he spins it right. He goes, "Little left now," and spins it back. And then I guess they get into like a little slick and he just throws it, spins it sideways. She's freaking out, "It's not working." And then I guess the husband in the back of the boat goes, he goes, "If you keep feeding her, she's going to keep eating it all day." So the next one, I guess they're coming down around Sunwest and, you know, there's that pasture out on the left.
Mm-hmm.
So as they're approaching it, she sees a bunch of cows out there.
Yeah, that's the herd of black bear ones.
Yeah.
I used that last week.
I think it was the same one, the same float.
Oh.
Because then, so she sees all these cows and she goes, "Hey, what kind of animals are those?" And Danny drops his oars and goes, "God dang it, the one day I forget my camera. Yeah. It's a herd of bears." And then I guess she got him back. What was the punchline of that one? It was, what's the movie they shot out here? I think it was a Native American movie. I can't remember. It's some 90s, some big Hollywood 90s movie. And, you know, so they're floating down and the woman in the front of the boat goes, "Oh my gosh, look up there on the plateau. There's a bunch of Indians." Danny goes, "Yeah, right." You know. Yeah. And she goes, "No, I swear." And then he looks up and he goes, "You didn't say they were wearing face paint."
That was, I remember that movie. Was that at the cliffs?
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was at the cliffs. Yeah.
I don't know. I remember, I've heard that story before that they shot it there. I don't know.
That's a good one, too. If you guys have either pulled good pranks on people or been the victim of them, and you're bold enough to share, we'd love to hear them because I think those are funny. Write in and leave them in the comments. I need some new ideas for messing with my friends this summer.
I know people that are into such things, but I can't remember any of them.
Yeah, they always leave my head.
Funny at the moment, but not so much.
I'm sure people have like left mice around.
Mice?
Yeah, like dead ones.
Yeah. Or other things.
Yeah, many.
I threatened to put some dog shit in one of the guide's coolers to see if he actually would find it.
If you'd clean it out.
At some point, it wasn't one of my guides, but everybody talked about what a pig he was. I said, "Well, drop one in a tooler and see what happens. See if he ever figures it out."
That'd be good.
Oh, road apple.
All right, so if you've heard of good ones, we always like a good laugh, so let us know. Another topic I wanted to kind
these
of just...
These usually come to me about 3 days from now.
Yeah. Well, maybe we'll get into episode...
40?
Yeah, 15, 16, I can't remember what number we're on now. Another topic I wanted to discuss with you is something that we kind of took a lot of heat for, I think wrongfully. I think there were a lot of morons on Instagram about this one, but we went up between the lakes and shot a how to hook set video. And I, being very new to my camera gig at that time, neglected to see that there was a big drop of water on the lens. So we never ended up,
teach you a lesson.
We never ended up publishing the full video, but I got an Instagram short out of it, where I thought it was pretty funny. It was, you know, Kelly saying, you know, "When I set that hook, I try to break that fish's jaw," which is it's maybe not an exaggeration, but you're not actually breaking fish's jaws often. Sometimes we get them in the mandible.
You're dumb enough to think you can do that.
There are a lot of dumb people on the internet is what we found out. But then it cut to a compilation of you, you know, through a bunch of shows we'd shot already, you know, whack, whack, whack. And everybody and their uncle wrote in and said, "Why are you trout setting on a streamer? You're supposed to strip set." And one guy said, like, "In salt water, you're supposed, like, what are you doing? You're supposed to strip set and point at the fish." And I remember I just commented back and said, "This is how you hook set for trout with a streamer in a river."
You can do it whatever you want.
So why don't you kind of talk through your style of hook set, which seems to really light people's hair on fire, kind of why you do it.
I heard it. Well, I mean, you can strip set if you want to, First of all, it's probably the fact that you are a line stripper, that you have one retrieve and you strip like this and you get caught, you have to do that, right? I don't strip line, like I manipulate my lures with, if you haven't figured it out, a lot of what I do has to do with bass fishing or general tackle. And so I don't let my hand get back here and have to transfer. And so that is indicative of, and I do that too. I mean, if I'm in the middle, if you've watched any of them, to pretend that one is what you do means you are seriously pigeonholed. I mean, if you have one strike and that's all you have, you're in deep shit because you're going to get caught between it. I move my rod to manipulate my fly. And my hands are always right here. I don't strip against my finger. I move my rod and strip the excess. At which point, if I was at that and I was in that strip where I was here, I simply pull straight back.
Right.
If I am in the middle of those, I like to hit low. I like to drop my elbow against myself and rock into it. And because that way I'm in complete control the second I set up on that fish. This is not complete control. Pointing your rod straight at a fish is really pretty stupid in a lot of cases. I mean, now we're running 12 pounds, so the likelihood of you snapping that tippet.
It's rare.
It
can happen.
I straightened that hook on that one, but that was a complete like this.
Yeah.
But pulling against the fish, it either way, but I read one of those, you know, that if you did that, then they'll come back and get it. Well, if I miss it, they come back. I haven't done anything else either, but I don't know. I said it, I saw some of those. I thought they were pretty, it's like anything else on earth. Everybody's got an opinion. And I mean, how you do it, I've been doing it pretty successfully for 25 years one way. It doesn't mean, but I don't not, I mean, I will strip set on a rare occasion. It's just a matter of, it's indicative of where my hands are and where I am in the retrieve when the fish eats it. And so I like to really, and it makes me feel good too. I really like a really good hook set. But there's nothing wrong with doing that.
No, I mean, I think strip settings, like it's huge in salt world because generally they're not animating with the rod, right? They are
never
pointing at their fish.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're simply a line puller, then I think it's fine. I think
and
it's
that's what you do
the
on
best
fresh,
method.
That's what you do on freshwater or on in lake salt.
Well, yeah, I mean, lake salt.
Lake salt. You're pointing your fish. You're not dealing with current. You're not. I mean, some respects the there's a lot of this, you know, hard jaw thing about making sure that you're a trout set to me is an upset like this.
Yep.
This is not. If you watch how I set, I drop that thing so hard into me, I guarantee you I set harder than any strip set on earth without breaking your line. And it's not like it's a new technique. I think when George wrote that, isn't that what he wrote, the name of his book, Strip Set, something like that, when George Daniels did his streamer book, which I was into, it's a catchy phrase,
yeah.
You know? And it's, you know, more of that salt thing about, you know, don't trout set. You know, that's one of the things the guides are always yelling at their customers about. Oh, you trout set. Yeah, they did. They went like, no, I mean in the salt. They go like this, they would with a, which isn't a good hook set either.
No,
that is not a good hook set. It's not good for, this is a good clean, that's a nice clean dry fly set. This is nobody's set. Ever, period, and it's not what I do. I drop into my rod and I come right forward, I get very good, and I'm on that fish. Because the second you hook the fish, so much of the fight is begun, and you can watch people that are just freaking clueless when they get that fish on. It's like all hell breaks loose, and they're jumping, and they're running, they're trying to clear line, it's like, you could get a lot more control if you just set up, if you're composed, and you can manage things there too. But it doesn't matter if you're strip setting or you're doing what I do or whatever it is you like. I mean, put the fish in the boat.
Yeah, as long as you stick them.
Yeah, I mean, it's just what it is.
I think that's what the, you know, playing devil's advocate, we see a lot of comments of people saying, well, you know, if you hit them like that and they don't have the fly, then that fly is going to launch back at you or do a giant move and it may turn the fish off. But if my argument has always been, so let me back up. If you do a strip set, you may only pull that fly 2 feet and then it's going to sit there again and the fish might have another chance at it. My argument's always been, well, if I know the fly is in the fish's mouth, I'm going to do everything I can to try to bury it there. I'm not going to assume that it's going to let it go and then try to get it again. And oftentimes, you know, if you sting them, yank that fly away, you can throw it back in there and they're so juiced up, they're going to come back and eat it again. So
I mean, and they're, and whomever's saying that about the fly, I mean, I can't tell you how many times I went right straight back in and the fish ate it. But I assume that, first of all, for those listening, I don't believe fish, real fish, we've talked lots of times, what's real mean? It means over 22 or 3. Real fish never hit the tail of a fly, ever, period, end of discussion. You do not, the predators do not go up and mess with their shit. They go in to kill it. They go in, they hit it behind the calithrum where the heart is, in the head, they go to stun it. They've gone in and they have ate that fly. You talk about some 16-inch piss ant that maybe is curious more than they are attacking the fly. Predator-sized fish do not act like juveniles. They eat the thing, they eat it hard, they come in, they stun it. And by the way, we've done other stuff about this too. They bite it, they seldom get to eat that if it's real. They have to kill it and let it go to eat it. Yeah. And the physics are just so simple. If something bites it by the head and the rest of it's hanging back here, how the hell does he get it in his mouth?
No, they got a dropper.
I mean, they ain't got hands. I mean, what are you going to do? You got to put the thing in your, and they can't, water's pushing the thing. If they open their mouth, it's out of its mouth. And so, but there's just so many wives still. That whole tail strike thing is so stupid to me. But that here and there. My assumption is that because of the way I move my flies, that I have triggered a response and I have made the fish eat it. I think he's ate it where it belongs.
Yes.
He eats the head of the fly. I'm setting the hook. And bingo, right? Well, even with all of that, you still get a lot of fish just letting that thing go, and you don't get a hook in them.
Right.
And it wouldn't matter how you set the fly.
It's bite strength.
Yeah, it's just, it is what it is. And so, but I, if I was going to agree with that in any way, this whole thing, first of all, that tells me that for sure that you are a line stripper.
Yeah.
All right. You're pulling the rope. That's what you got in your arsenal. That's telling me that right away. And it makes sense. If you went like that and they didn't eat it, great. Because it will be if you think they miss it or whatever, or if you think they hit the things in the wrong spot, whatever, and it did move that far and you can keep it moving, hallelujah, you probably do have a great shot at a second shot.
Yeah.
Great. I don't give a shit. If you can show me it works better than what I'm doing, I'll try it.
No,
I do say.
Yeah, no, you
depending on where I am in my. I mean, I'm not a single one trick pony thing. Right. I don't only do this and have to do that. And I mean, it's because if I'm in between those things, things happen. You'll see a lot of times I go like this.
Right.
I'm set off the side and I've jerked. There's a strip set on it like that. So, but I mean, there's no right. If it works for you, hallelujah.
Yeah, yeah. So
and I think my ways worked for me pretty damn well for a long time.
I think that the key of like why your method works for you is when animating with the rod tip, you're quote unquote out of position to strip set. You know, when your rod's here and you have a bow in your line, because you fish these long sinking mm-hmm. lines that aren't dead straight on the top of the water like a floating line would be, then that 2 foot strip set might just tickle the fish. If you're not, mm-hmm. if you don't have a completely tight system, your rod's off, you strip set, your rod's gonna bend towards the fish a little bit. But if you can strip set and rack them, I mean, mm-hmm. with a 9 foot rod, you know, going from pointing at a fish to sideways, obviously you're going to get bend in there, but you have way more ability to pull that fly at a distance, which is essentially a speed. Mm-hmm. So it's...
The other thing for me, though, is that I like being in that control position the second I hook the fish.
Well, you have shock absorption immediately, instead of having to try to let line out to get shock absorption.
I like the fact that I like to dominate the living shit out of that fish in that first 5 seconds. I get, if I can turn that head, I mean, I just get more control, especially on that first set. And you're watching the fish. Big fish don't fight that hard, really. 20-inch fish fight generally harder than a 7-pound fish does. And you set up on it. If you can get control right there, and see that fish's head and be cognizant of the fact that he can only go one or two directions, right? And if you can continue that arc and turn that fish's head around in that first 2 or 3 seconds, it's staggering how much faster you, given that you're in control of the rest of the
right.
operation. And so when somebody writes in to me and tells me that that's wrong and this is right, I just need to see him fight a fish, right?
Yep.
And so... if your next immediate thing is to clear the line and get on the reel and do this, and well, look at me go, we're not talking. But if we can,
don't call.
Yeah, we can. There's no right or wrong.
No,
I mean
it all depends on how you are animating the fly, the positions you're in, right? Every hook set's going to be different. I mean, there's times I remember I put a clip on Instagram from when we were down in Chile. Remember I had that big female race out of the shadows after mm-hmm. the White Envy.
Yeah,
well,
the bottom of that.
I had lost, you know, I was in the back of the boat. I couldn't really retrieve at the angles I wanted to because you're in a big raft, white
right.
water, right? So it's not my ideal fishing setup, but I was making it work. And, you know, I let my rod get too high and too far behind me. And then I saw that fish racing out and I twitched it like that. So I'm way out of position from where I would ideally be.
Mm-hmm.
That fish ate, and I racked him back as far as I could and then stripped back on it. So it's just anything you could do when the fish eats to set the hook, right?
At some point.
I mean, I screwed up 9 times, but I set the hook. It's on Instagram. Go watch
it. All you can do.
And then I hit our guide in the head with the net. That was
perfect.
Really nice. Thanks, Bob. Sorry about that.
But There's a lot of quarterbacks out there, armchair quarterbacks.
It's,
but it's what works for you. There's a reason in any sport in the world. You used to box like this, you know?
That was a joke. Well, I walked up to Kelly one time and I did this. I went.
but we did box differently.
Yeah, and it was the 1800s.
Bruce Lee wasn't
That's
a high
was...
kicker, and he meets Chuck Norris, and the world changes, right?
Yeah.
He didn't say, Chuck didn't walk up and say, you did that wrong. You're doing this wrong. You know, adapt. Learn more than one thing. If that's what you've got and you really like that strip set, add something new to your... And that's what we preach constantly on any style of fish, anything. We don't fish bass like we did 30 years ago.
Right.
You don't set the hooks the same as you did 30 years ago. We have different types of monofilaments and braids and fluoros, and we've got different hooks, and we've got different gear ratios, blah, blah, blah. And you go into the fly world, we really kind of stuck with just a couple things. And it stagnates this. I mean, the young kids are coming on. They're changing things up, and they're not afraid to try everything. But when I read that stuff, I don't get too hung up on it. I just go on.
I find it enjoyable. I like reading it.
I get where they're coming from because they've learned one way.
Yeah.
But, I mean, anything in the world, there's
a lot of ways.
There's several
ways
to
skin the cat.
Yes,
right?
To skin the cat as much.
Okay, so.
I'm surprised you don't get any shit for saying that one.
Okay, so moving on, here's another question for you. How. If you wanted to explain the difference, because there I believe there is a very material difference, obviously, between a hook set for a streamer, a nymph, and a dry fly, kind of regardless of how you're nymphing. How would you describe the differences between the three? Let's just say we're classic indicator nymphing. We're not doing the Euro stuff.
between
streamer, bobber.
Besides, we always streamer fishing's rock and roll, dry fly symphony, and nymphing is, I don't know, something in between.
You hit it pretty hard. So I've seen this a number of times with people fishing dry flies. We're like, they get that eat, they're so excited about it, they jack them.
Yeah.
And a real fish, as soon as it feels, a lot of time they'll take off before you even have a chance to hook mm-hmm. set. They eat that thing, if your presentation isn't great, and you just pop that fish off immediately, break your fly off.
Well, anytime what you described is a beginner habit is just overset on a dry fly.
Yep.
I mean, there's times you lift your rod. You just don't have to do much.
A slow, gentle
lift. You just lift your rod.
Right.
Yeah. But that's a composure thing that only happens after you've caught enough fish that you just sit there and
no panic.
There's no panic, and it goes back to, and all hook sets should be, they're the beginning of the fight of the fish. And one should set you up to get in control of the next thing that happens, and that's going away from you. And so if you do this and your arm goes up in the air and you're standing there like a Statue of Liberty, like, oh my God, you're screwed already. And if composure's composure, it doesn't matter. Dropping off a cliff like you guys did the other day and bonked your head, right? Matt stood there too long and looked at that thing and just the overall thought, but the excitement part of it. And so you set the hook, and so the dry fly set should be a very composed set. Now, mind you, there's unlike streamer fishing, you generally have a light tippet. You're simply trying to get contact of the fish because you're assuming it's a dry fly eat. It's not a mystery like a nymph or a streamer eat is, where you don't necessarily always see them eat the streamer. And so now it should be a composure thing. You see the fish eat. As soon as his head drops in, you pick your rod up and go tight. All you're trying to do is slip that line enough that it goes through and hooks something in that fish's face, right? And so you should be composed. Now, you know you're on a light tippet. Your composure should be set for not the set. It should be for the next 3 seconds when that fish goes crazy and takes off running, and you're on 5X tippet or 6X tippet, and you lock down on your line and your rod goes down and all hell breaks loose, or are you just nicely composed and sitting there waiting for with your rod in the perfect angle that you can simply turn your wrist one way or the other and dictate where that fish goes. So for a dry fly eat, it is so much different than the rest of them because you saw it eat it. You don't have to guess on that part, you know? And so composure is everything. If you see it, the head coming up, I mean, you get on a slow, deliberate eat, like a spinner eat, when they bring their heads up, and you see that head and you give that thing a pull, you're not going to get a fish. They have to be able to drop in, you know, close their mouth and go down. That's composure. And that's why, I think it's why we make dry flies such hallowed ground, it's like the epiphany, you know, that's it. It's you see it all happen and you go, oh yeah, I got it. And you're totally composed. You watch people that are great dry fly anglers. They just look like they're just a little bit slow motion. There's just no panic to anything, right? Whereas you watch saltwater or streamer guys, we hook fish and all hell breaks loose and you're jumping from your line. It's the it's rock and roll, the symphony. One is there's 26 stringed instruments playing in the background. And then Ted Nugent comes down with a stranglehold and you jack that son of a bitch and it takes off running, all hell breaks loose. That's the whole part of it. It's so fun. And so, but on the dry fly eats, the thing you just need to put in your mind is composure, and that the first 3 seconds when that fish eats, you're going to dictate the game right there.
Yep.
The rest, if you just stand there waiting with your line screaming through your finger, you know, off your reel, and you're just looking around and you look, we talked about another podcast somewhere where I said, don't look for your exit strategy.
Right.
You already have it in your head. You're already fighting your fish. You just set it up. And nymph fishing can be even, I think in some ways, more complicated on eats in some regards, is that there's the line's underwater. And depend, and if you're Euro fishing, you're tight, right? If you're tight lining, as popular as Euro nymphing is, I still think more people bobber fish and do that. And
for sure. So the Euro guys are just loud.
Yeah. Yes. And so they're in control because they're going by sight and feel. Yep. Right. So they don't have to do, if you're like that and you're coming through that run and if you're doing it right and you're leading your flies and you're watching you're watching for your takes and your line moving and all that, all you're going to do is you barely move your rod because you're tight.
You're tight.
You're already there.
Yep.
They've taken the fly, and the only reason you feel it or see it, because something changed down there, that means they've got it, right? Yep. They've at least opened up, moved their mouth, something's happened. And so you just tap, you're in. And you're generally small barbless hooks and stuff like that. You run a double fly on a dropper rig or an indicator system, and there's a lot of shit going on down there. You know, your bobber's up here, it doesn't hang straight down very often. And so you're going to have a little bit more of a hook set than you would if you were leading your fly. And that leading the fly thing, what you should be tight to that indicator. I like to lead my I actually lead an indicator when I nymph fish with an indicator. I lead it just like you do when you check nymph.
Yep.
I mean, you lead that thing, so understanding what there's.
Well, real quick, so are you talking about high sticking it or having your line down?
Essentially the same. It doesn't matter.
Yeah,
I lead the same indicator.
Yes. Yeah.
I lead it down the river.
Yep.
Right? And it's under tension, barely. Just like with a Euro. I mean, when your sight, you know, like you're leading that the Euro nymph system, you're leading it, trying to stay in contact. Some people call it contact nymphing. You know, you're leading it so you can't miss the visual of the line moving or the feel of the fish touching it. But if you got an angle in that leader system from your, and you have to, because the bobber's going one speed, the flies are going another, you've got enough lead on there, it's getting close to bottom, right? You have to have a little bit more aggressive hook set on a nymph rig with an indicator, because there's more diversion to that leader. It's getting diverted by, you know, this current's going this way, it's pushing your lead here, your flies are over here, maybe you got a too light a fly, it's up above it, you got to get a little bit closer, but you never lose the composure, the fact that you set up, you've got a 9 or 10 foot rod, and if you're leading it like this and you just simply pick your wrist up, that rod's going to move 6 feet.
A lot.
You do not need to jack your arm up in the air like this, for those who aren't watching, putting your hand over your head. You just got to go like that and keep your hands in there, because the second you hook, we lose sight of the thought that you have to be composed to fight the fish.
Yeah.
You know, it's like hook the fish is one thing, and he goes batshit crazy on you and takes off another direction that you weren't planning because your hand's over your head. You're out anyway. I don't care what great angler you fish with, streamer wise. I mean, I think of that some of the days when I'd be on the white with Jack Ford and Richie Strolis and Alex Lufkus and, you know, Russ Madden and you name it. I mean, the boys from Canada, those guys get there. Everybody had a style, right? And everybody has a little different style, but every one of them's a freaking master. Yeah. And it's just like, I mean, we talk a lot about fight. You go and MMA is huge now. There's going to be 1,000 styles. They're all pretty freaking good.
Yeah, there's right? a lot of ways to
there's
do
it. There's not one style.
Right.
And so, and for that matter, running backs, golfers, everybody, I mean, you don't really hear too many people in other sports that are really, they don't say, well, he's doing that wrong.
Well, okay, so Scottie Scheffler, for all of our golf heads out there, is a great example of this. You know, world number one, most dominant stretch of 3 years that we've seen since Tiger, right? In 2000, 2002. Unbelievable stretch he's on. The guy jumps in his golf swing, and his feet bounce and move. In his entire life, everybody was like, that's horrible. What are you doing? Yeah. Nobody's ever done that before. Well, guess what? He's the purest ball striker on tour, the longest driver. Everybody in the world
trying to bounce on
Yeah, we're just trying to jump and turn sideways and spin. And it's just goes to show there's a lot of ways to do it. I mean, there's still fundamentals, right? He's still in his slot and blah, blah, blah. But
yeah, but he might not even have to. I mean, if that was my point, there's just always been, once you master, I mean, I think about Fishman Jack Ford at 80 years old, and this guy can laser a 7-inch fly within a half inch of anything on the planet. I don't give a shit, right? Yeah. He is so good. And I'm going to tell him how to do something? Are you kidding me?
Right.
I mean, it's just like you master it and then you develop it. Yeah. That's what you do in fishing. Fly tying, you know, there, everything has changed in the fly tying rule because all these kids come along and say, well, I'll do it different. Well, there's their fly. And it's pretty damn good, right? Like, great. Right. And so we would have nothing if we didn't change the rules constantly. Yeah. We'd all still be fishing a cane pole, right? I mean,
some people still
what's
do.
This real? You know, well, 10 cars, a whole nother discussion.
Yeah.
But I mean, there's... It's just what it is. That's why I kind of crack up whenever somebody lights me up on there about, you dumbass, you don't know anything. You're right. You want a cup of coffee. And here, I mean, it's like, Russ Madden's has completely different cast than I do.
Yeah.
Watching Russ cast, I mean, it's a completely different. And every angler, I'm just thinking, some of the best casters in the world. I mean, Lefty Cray. Lefty Cray had a virtually impossible cast to duplicate. That loading behind your ear and front and back right there. I mean, it was so hard to do that. And, you know,
but Steve. It works for him.
It works for him. Yeah. Steve Ray, Jeff's got a different cast than Tim does. I mean, it's hard to argue this stuff. And it's just, it is what it is. So, before you get too caught up in the shit, try the other one.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it is what it, there's not one way to do anything. I mean, race car drivers race differently. You wouldn't think there'd be a lot of change. There is. There's a lot of difference.
I'm going to go straight and then I'm going to make a left.
The bottom line is, how often do you screw up? And, I mean, do you put the fish in the boat? Do you land your fish? Do you put the fish in the boat? Do you get caught? Are you always that person with their hands up and you're going ape shit crazy, or are you just very composed and figure it out? I mean,
I also think credit where credit's due. Fishing on camera's hard. Everybody's looking for your little mistakes to call out.
That's all right. That makes it interesting.
No, it is. I think it's fun. And
it's funny every time I
way
fish.
To get better.
Every time you fish. And by the way, I was watching this morning. 6 o'clock, I was watching Bassmaster, this morning. It was 2 days ago. I was watching another show. Dave, forgot his name. He's a new guy, kind of. God, he's really good. And he must have brought up 3 times. Well, this is supposed to work, but we do have the camera rolling. And then I watched Kevin Van Dam, best ever, right? And he said, well, you know, said something to the effect of yesterday, he says, but we weren't filming yesterday. And it's like, it's just a band-aid on your ego. It's just what it is. It's the difference between film fishing and fishing is, if you don't catch shit in the day when the camera's not running, you don't care.
Yeah.
You just say, oh, another day of real fishing.
Oh, right.
You know, and then you go out and the camera's rolling and it's like, uh-oh, it's another day of real fishing. This sucks.
Yeah. What's what did your old camera guy used to say?
Catch one.
Hey, catch now. One. Now.
Catch one. Now.
Hey, now would be a good time.
Gene, not how it works. Yeah. Catch one. Now. And that, you know, back, we were talking about expectations and keeping expectations low or high or whatever it is in the last podcast we did about And that's, you know, I think that's the difference between the pros and the people that aren't. Pro jocks, people who fish for a living, get that there's a lot of that, you know, they get it. And so, I mean, you got to thicken your skin up a little bit and stop whining about it. It's just, you'd go crazy if you listened to everybody telling you how great they were, but, and they may be, I don't know. I just haven't fished with them all yet.
I'm sure some are, some aren't.
I've fished with some of the best anglers in the world. I guided a lot of them, and we all had bad days.
Think about the morning we were down on the South Fork with Stenerson.
That guy.
Incredible caster, great angler, right?
Unbelievable.
Well-versed in all methods of fly fishing.
Spectacular spade.
And, you know, we're there. I think he'd hammered them the morning before on streamers. You know, you start him off in the front of the boat, you're rowing, and it's 20 minutes. He changes through flies, follows the whole program.
Oh, the streamer part.
Yeah, the morning. Didn't touch a fish that entire float. No, I think you got
double
one
floater.
That was about that big.
And we got one later.
Yeah, we did a double float, and late we got one.
I think it was a triple float. I think we did one down, came back up, went down again.
Yeah, you're right.
And came up on the third float in the same water, because I had John go twice. We went through it twice because we had the jet sled.
Yeah.
And,
and he threw Goldens one time through.
Okay, maybe that's what it was.
Yeah.
You don't get better than John Stenerson.
No, he's pretty darn incredible. Talk about an effortless caster, too.
Wait to see him spay cast.
Oh, I'd love
it's frightening.
That. Yeah.
I mean, Simon's his neighbor, you know.
Oh, yeah. That helps. I've heard of that guy.
Yeah. But, I mean, half the people we fish with are so, I don't know. It's so easy. Like, I watch bass shows and a lot, which I bring up constantly. And I took a picture of something because there is this, you're watching these bass guys who are the best in the world. By the way, they play for a lot of money, right? And so it's in here somewhere. I took a picture of it just so I could, I'm going to use it in my program for, sorry, folks, I'm scrolling for hours here.
This is what we call good podcasting.
Yeah, good podcasts. You can't see me. Somewhere in here, I know.
I stole that from another podcast, but nothing's an original idea.
But you watch these guys who are playing for $300,000. They're going to fish for a week, and I've got a picture of the earnings for the week is what I'm trying. There it is. Sorry about that.
Here.
So take this picture. So this is a payout on this, and not to mention, sometimes you'll have, like in the heavy hitters and the MLF or something, you'll have $100,000 for the biggest fish of the week, right? The biggest, $100K.
It's an expensive
maybe it's
fish.
15, maybe it's 25, maybe it's 50. You never know, right? But this one happened, I think, be 100K or something like that. And Van Dam won on his last tournament. He got the heavy hitters and he got a $100,000 bonus check, like he needs it. But the point of that being is that these guys are fishing. They're the best in the world. We all talk about we're the best in the world. Oh, that guy's the best. We don't know that. You know, you go out and you fish, you know, maybe, okay, we got a world champion, Euro Nymfer, world champion, he is fishing dries at you. He is the world champion. But we don't really do that much in the U.S. The Europeans do a lot of it. But so here these bass guys are. And back in the day, I don't know when the last time, I haven't heard it lately, but the average tournament is won by 13 ounces. 13 ounces, and you got all day to fish, right? And so, and you'll routinely see the best angler by tournament winnings not make the cut. And not make, you know, or they make the cut, but they don't make the final. Or, you know. And you get, but the top guys are usually the top guys, but there will be one guy crushes it and nobody, and you know, 19 other guys do okay. And somebody will have a zero.
Right.
Right. And at the end of the day, it's usually a 13 ounce difference between 300,000 and 200,000.
Yep.
Or whatever that number was. I, I brought it up there because in the old days, people always were talking shit about bass guys. I'd hear it. When I had my shop in Michigan, at one point, we turned a third of it into bass fishing. And all I heard was Bass Bubba. Bubba? Bubba made $2 million last year, Jack Wagon.
Catching fish.
Catching fish, doing what we all talk about.
I think he's got it figured out.
And he's got a contract for a lure company for another couple million. And it's like, huh. So, but they're the best of the best. And
that's
they
Bubba. I wouldn't mind being Bubba. Yeah. You know?
And they have to compete a lot, right?
Yeah.
And so the point of that was, is that the difference between, well, we were talking about film fishing, but that's not really true. You usually go out, and again, because I brought it up because of Kevin saying that, you know, well, yesterday we crushed it, but we weren't filming. There is something about putting that camera on, not necessarily to the fish not bite as much, but the first time you went and you got to fish on film, you were nervous. And you get kind of want not to make mistakes. So the second you get nervous, you make mistakes.
Naturally.
And Johnny must have stepped on his freaking the first time he fished. He was
God.
A disaster.
Oh, it's so
an
good.
Absolute disaster. Oh, I never do this. I never do it. Says, yes, you do. You do it every time we go fishing, but we don't look at each other and don't care because we do the same mistake. And so, and that's where it gets kind of easy to look at the, we're all guilty of it. I mean, we watch somebody else. Oh, shit. I'd never do that. Well, until the camera rolls, then you will. And so it's different. It's just, you get what you get and live with it. Or in Spalding's case, you'll get nothing and like it. He didn't like the hair. Sorry. Got some new hair from Varner.
Check out Varner Hair on our website.
Josh Varner's hair is the best hair in the world. And if you aren't using it, you ain't tying.
There it is.
It is so, this is a die shot. But I love doing a brown drake out of moose body. And this stuff, we're kind of, see that?
Ooh, yeah.
It's my favorite. I mean, my brown drake, I just saw one up here. Where was it? This fly right here. Sorry, a little diversion. It's going to be so perfect. Get up there.
Okay, so I don't really remember what we were talking about, but what I had a thought of
we're
was,
talking about how everybody bitches about how one person does it.
Oh, yeah.
We got on the whole rant that just master it. Master it and make it your own. If you're a one-hook set person, we started on that, learn another one. Just do something.
That's a huge thing. Try something different. I know you preach this of like, well, if you always run the left and you've never got a giant fish there,
yeah,
try the right.
Wow.
what a revolutionary idea that is.
I have said this forever, and I shot a TV show with Bill Erdman, Gear versus Fly, that fish with gear people, fish with bait people, they're not the Antichrist. You won't turn to a pillar of salt if you're seen with one. Bill, maybe, but he's pretty despicable. But
fun guy.
The great anglers are great at everything. That's the thing you see. Because their minds are open to try any. Doesn't mean it ain't like you're eating a dog shit sandwich. You don't have to keep doing it. But you might pick one thing up. You might just learn one thing. And if you do the exact same thing every time, you probably are replicating the same mistakes every time too. If you do it all right, if you've ever had a mistake, you probably do fish with somebody. I mean, I love, like I said, fishing with, especially some of the younger, I mean, they're not that young now, but when I first started, like fishing with Richie Strolis, I mean, just couldn't wait the first time I could get in the boat. And I always say, I'll row. No, I'll row out because I'm so much older than all of them. You know, they're like, no, I'll row. I just want to watch these cats tie or fish. And the same thing goes for fly tying. I've talked about this before, when I go to do a seminar somewhere, and especially at the big tying shows, I go around and I watch people tie, especially younger people, you know, or Charlie Craven. He just pisses me off. And so nobody should be that good. But anyway, I just watch how they do things, right? And if I get to fish with you or if I get to fish with you know, Richie Strolis or Alex Lufkis or Madden or whomever, Mikey Schmidt, you know, Schulze, any of these guys. I was fishing with Russ since he was 17 years old.
Yeah.
And I still watch the kid. And even when he wasn't that great, you know, when he's a kid, he's still doing all the crazy shit and going too fast and probably going too fast on a lot of things. But he was I never ceased to learn. I mean, that was just, it could be anything. It might be a line hand. Might be the way they stand in the boat so they don't get sore. I don't know.
Yeah, or how to not stand on their line.
Yeah, just a million things. It's just, I don't know.
So I heard a great quote the other day. I was listening to a podcast, and Coach Rick Pitino, who won national championship at Kentucky and Louisville, coached in the NBA for different franchises, now is at St. John's, just crushing it. Legendary for a couple different reasons, but yeah, there's some funny recruiting violations he made when he's at Louisville.
I take it this is round ball.
What's that?
Basketball?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, yeah, exactly. So, Rick Pitino, his quote was, he hated the quote, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. He said, if it ain't broke, break it and make it better.
Yeah.
I love that, exactly. Right? It's like, you know, he was talking about that from, you know, he had an incredible team, I think in 05 or whatever it was with Louisville. And they're like, well, we're not losing anybody. Well, he completely changed his entire style of defense because people were going to be expecting what he was doing the year before, right? Like, and I think it applies to fishing. It's what all, you know, all the young cats you're talking about are doing. Well, yeah, there's ways that work, but break it. And then try to fix it. Try to make it better.
You know what? It's like these dubbing brushes. When I was thinking about that, whenever I meet some young guy, he'll show me his fly. He goes, well, it's your fly. I just changed it. I said, well, then it's your fly. Yeah. Hunter was the worst at that when he first got here. Well, I just kind of copied yours and did this. I says, look like anything like one of my flies. What's that shit on its head? You know, so he's dubbing brush and stuff, you know, and they're all, they made it their own,
right?
You know, and then it's got a fish. And said, no, that's what I first asked him. Is it fish? Yeah, kill it with it. Win.
There's your fly.
It win.
Yeah, that's
what
great.
What more do you need out of life?
Yeah.
You know, it's like, it's got two hooks. It's mine. No.
It's like, yeah. Is it an articulated streamer? Yeah, it's a gallop pattern.
Oh, that must be mine. It's like, holy shit. But
Does it have a dirty name? Yeah, it's probably a gallop pattern.
That part's... So they, but I mean that if it's like that coach said, break it, fix it.
Yeah.
You know, make it, change it, do
something. Remember that hairline dubbing brush that came into the shop and, you know, they sent it over to us for you to test and it's like a $40 dubbing brush. Wasn't it a dubbing brush? I'm not making this up, right? It's like the.
Oh, you mean rake?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or dubbing rake. Yeah. I'm sorry. Not brush.
Say a $40 dubbing brush?
Sorry. Dubbing rate, the hairline
hair that we can't get.
Long night for me. $40 dubbing rake, and I mean, it came in, and we all just made fun of it. We're like, "What the hell is that thing? What a useless piece of junk! Why'd they send it over?" God. And then you sat down, scraped what was it, a pine squirrel skin or something, and you're like, "Oh my god!"
First 10 seconds, yeah. I'm like, "This is the greatest thing that's ever happened."
It's crazy.
It's a thing right here. It's a dubbing rake. I just thought
slidein.com sales pitch. There you go.
It's ceramic or something. I don't remember what, yeah. But they've been around for a long time. I just never, they were more like a rake in the old days. You'd get in there. That one, you just kind of pull it around and you can get any, but it sat on my desk for a week before I walked over and finally just sitting here going, oh, what the hell, I'll just see what it does. And
it's an essential piece,
thing.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's right up there with, we don't do that anymore either. We don't dub our own. We don't make our own dubbing much anymore. It used to be you had a coffee grinder and you made your own dubbing. Mm-hmm. And I had so much made up at one point that I quit doing it and I don't even know where my freaking grinder went. And one day I started looking for it going, where did that go? And I was like, shit, whatever happened to all that dubbing?
Yeah.
And so, you know, that the dubbing got so, I mean, my God, that new stuff we were talking about with the, Fulling Mill, where is it, this stuff? This new, for those of you who aren't watching, you can't see it, but this seal dub, this oh my God.
What is that, a 4x3?
Huh? It's a fully milled, I don't know, it's got like 12 things in it. Yeah. But that's why you blended your own in the old days. This is a totally diversion from where we were at, but that's how it's supposed to work, right? But you used to blend your own, like I got a shit ton of baby seal, but it's all one color, and I don't have enough of it to make every color I want, but I can add it into other stuff. Mm-hmm. And we used to do, you would just, in the old days, it was before there were all these spectacular synthetic dubbings. Now they're all blended together, but you used to take the synthetics and then put the natural in it, mm-hmm. trying to make your own stuff, and now they all do it. It's pretty clean, but I was this morning when I came over, when you were late, as usual, I was looking at this thing going,
first time.
God, would it be, I was just looking at how easy it's got. To get that in the old days, you'd been like, you'd have used it like, I can only use this on one fly. It took me 5 batches to get this to look like that. And how many squirrels are out there bald because of me trying to get one hair like that? Today, it's a little different. There's so many. I still miss blending it.
But. Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of cool. I mean, I don't really tie much anymore, but I like the artistic side of it. Like kind of owning every step of the process. It's pretty cool.
Well, that was where the rake came from.
Yeah.
That's when the rake came up. I had realized that I had really, truly not blended. I mean, I would always cut my hairs there. I cannot use synthetic dubbing for a hair's hair. And I would always cut it and pluck it, you know, pluck it off the ears, pluck it off the cheek, pull it off the, you know, and I'd get my little blend for, you know, 4 flies, whatever. And that's when I took that rake and I sat down and went like that. And I just kind of wrecked to see if it would do anything. And it was on a pine squirrel. And all I got were guard hairs. So a little harder. And I got a half and a half. Then a little harder and I got just fuzz, you know, I got under fur. I looked down and like had a little pile about size of a quarter. And it'd take me 3 tries in a blender to get that perfect.
I swear to God, a light shone down through the ceiling.
Oh my God, I just sat there looking at it. And I'm like, and the only thing I could think of is what a dumbass. For a week I sat here saying, this is the stupidest thing that ever was made. Who would buy this thing? I think I have 2 of them over there now, just in case. And it was all just...
Sometimes it's good to reject tradition.
I think always.
Yeah.
Learn it. Don't be, you know, you don't get to freestyle until you master, you know. If you're wondering about that, get in the ring. That's when you think you're a master, jump in that ring and it'll tell you a little different than fishing will. And you'll realize that, well, maybe I'll stay down here for a while. Maybe I will use a synthetic dubbing.
Yeah.
But it's just, but if you get close to mastering anything at some point, I mean, that's why there's so many coaches. I coached one of Tiger's swing coaches once.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. And
Butch Herman?
I don't know. He's from Chicago.
I don't know enough about him.
I don't know any of them.
He's had like 3 now, I think.
He seemed to make it sound like there'd been a lot more than that. It was one style, one club. It was something like that. Hmm. That guy could have been lying. I don't. He just told me. He says, you know, he had the greatest line. I was fishing him on the Manistee River. I'm certain he was from Chicago. It was 30 years ago. And he said, it was a light bulb moment about a lot of things for me. And he's sitting in the back of the boat. We're going, putting in at King's Trout Ranch, and it's kind of a private place then, launch. And this is a long time ago before everybody showed up there. And so we got the boat in, and I go to the car or the truck, and I grab my gear bag, and I grab 2 rods, and I walk down to the boat. He's still sitting there getting his stuff set up. And he stands up and he picks up his rod and he goes, how long does it take you? I don't know what he does for a living. I said, how long does it take you to know if your customer knows what he's doing? I said, when you pick that fly rod up off that car, I'm going to know exactly what I'm dealing with today. He goes, I can do the exact same thing with golf clubs. He says, when you pick up a golf bag, I know what my day's about. I said, you pick that rod up in the middle, I'll know what my day's about. And we just started laughing, and that's when he told me that he was Tiger's swing coach for 9 irons or some shit, I don't remember. Maybe it's short. Yeah, whatever it was.
Yeah.
But, and maybe it was a 110. I don't know. I don't question people. That's, I probably wouldn't be a great cop. I mean, when you tell me something, I'm like, great. And I totally believe it. Totally. I don't care. What's your name? Great. Yeah, glad to meet you. And so, yeah, I don't know. Life's too short to question everything. Can't shoot them if they're wrong anyway.
True.
Unless you're Richie. No, he's retired now.
That reminded me of what you're talking about, you know, picking something up and knowing what your day was going to be like. When I was down in Cuba this spring.
We're not talking about that. Oh.
No, so when I was down there, our Douglas rep sent me down with a bunch of sticks because I didn't have any saltwater sticks. And
Dan Short?
Shout out Dan Josh. Okay. Dan Short, Dan Josh, the man. Thank you, by the way. And a couple of them were brand new. Never been, you know, they still had plastic on the cork and stuff. And I didn't even look at that before we got down there. Just assumed that there had all been used rods. And so we get down on the dock, and it turns out my dad and I hadn't done the greatest planning of which lines needed to be on which reels. He had a couple of mismatches. And so we're on the dock, like, I'm kind of frantic, you know, we're all just hungover as hell, and everybody else is going out in the boats, and we're swapping lines around, and the guy goes to set up a couple of the rods, and he pulls out one that still has the plastic on it. He pulls out another that still has the plastic on it. And I can just see this look of dread in his eyes. I'm like, oh God, what did I get myself into? And language barrier, right? The guy spoke almost no English. I spoke just enough Spanish to, you know, say dirty things. And so immediately, and it was an ego thing at the time, but I was just like, I don't know if the backing loop on this is great, but I'm going to do a bimini twist in front of this dude just hopefully so he can relax a little bit and understand, like, that these guys aren't complete moron newbies. And like, we proved him wrong.
Want to be that guy or gal, do not walk with your rod straight up and down and hold the middle of the butt section, you know, like by the strip guide. Don't walk into the store with it like that. Don't walk to the boat with it right in the middle of the rod. It's a telltale. And it's don't zip your vest up.
Never
snip your vest.
It's like bottom button on a suit. It's always undone.
Jimmy Tini used to always wear his vest zip. That's Jimmy. You just can't do this. Don't do it. Come on. Open that up for me.
It's kind of a cool thing, you know? I'm trying to think of that. Oh yeah, our like onboarding. So I also ski instruct in the winter. Kelly knows this, but at our onboarding this year, you know, it's like returner training. They said, by the way, for all like the if you see any other instructors carrying their skis wrong, help them. And by the way, if you think there's more than one way to do it, you're doing it wrong.
You're wrong.
It's like there's one way to do this. And so you got to look the part.
It helps.
And yeah, it's an ego thing, but.
I suppose there's something like that in everything.
I was also thinking back to the hook set conversation that we were talking about. You know, for folks that haven't seen what Kelly talks about with, you know, a fish grabbing, like a big fish T-boning another fish, and they have to drop it to go eat it. One, I saw a great video on Instagram the other day. I should have saved it. There's no way I could find it now. But it showed that a big fish running around with another fish, and it dropped it, launched downstream, turn around, and then hit it again going upstream. Mm-hmm. The biggest brown trout I caught last year did that. I mean, it followed a streamer. It followed it out to my feet, and then launched downstream, flipped around, and then followed it to my feet like 4 or 5 more times before it finally broadsided it. I changed the angle of the retrieve to me and just absolutely broadsided it.
You know, that's a nature thing too. I mean, people don't give fish enough credit. I was just reading a book I think it was one of Gary LaFontaine's books. I was clean. I'm having remodeling my house a little bit, and so I pulled my library down of books, and I just sat there for 6 hours, didn't do anything. So I'm just going through all these books over and over again, following books I haven't seen in 30 years. And he was talking about the predatory habits of a big fish and how they will set and they have to make it worth their while. So it's not uncommon for a fish to, you know, get the angle, have to get the angle. And he was talking about how it was, I got to find it because I want to use it in my seminars, but because I always talk about predatory. And he had almost identical thing about 16-inch fish to 16 to 20-something. He said when they become predators, they completely quit. And he's doing this by diving and seeing it, evidently, that they quit doing that inquisitive tap-tap thing because trout are inquisitive. When they get in that 22 world and above, they simply look for a kill shot. Yeah. They either take the shot or they don't take the shot, but they don't come in and do it by mistake. And how they wouldn't come up and a juvenile fish will come up and kind of like touch the thing and or bump it or do that, whereas an adult would just come in and make a kill shot. So your fish was trying to get his kill shot.
Yes.
And can't get that kill shot. And so, you know, and there could be some of that to do with musky fish. You know, when you're doing a figure eight at the boat or cauldron, big sweeping, you know, the fish comes in and they'll just drop out on you, stare at your ass. And you start figure eighting in these big sweeps and it comes around. I've done that for 2 minutes. I've heard guys say they did it for over six. And then they eat it.
And then get a musky to eat.
Yeah. God, and they eat insane. It right at your feet in the boat, right? And so they're looking for that actual kill shot. Where was that going to? Where did we get on that thing?
I don't know. We're just talking about fishing.
No shit.
I do think, rainbows do more of that tap, tap stuff. Like in the episode, we've got another episode of Hunt for the 30 coming out soon. Just got to figure out, I might be out by the time people are listening to this, but I got a big fish on a spay rod in there and it tapped.
That was good footage.
It tapped it twice, and then just, it's hard to say with a fish like that if it's swiping at it and you're feeling a water current moving the fly when you're swinging on a tight line. Like, it could be.
But if you think about that, they have to get, think of the angle that it takes when you think swing. If the fish has to eat the head, he might be just doing this, trying to get around it, but he can't come from behind it.
So this is where I agree with larger flies. They have to eat the head. Mm-hmm. I was fishing a Montana Intruder, which is a 2 to 2.5 inch pattern.
Yeah, they could probably swell.
That was a 27.25 inch mm-hmm. fish. I think that thing, a small fly when it swung, I think they can eat that thing from behind because they can swallow the entire thing. Now, brown trout, you know, a 20-inch brown trout that's going after a 6-inch fly, definitely not eating that from behind, right?
Well, I'd agree with that to a degree, but...
Fins out, like all the...
Fins out and dorsal fins don't go down backwards.
But
you aren't going to eat a
2-inch fish, they might?
They might. I mean, you'd be taking your life in your own hands.
Yeah. But, and who knows, might have just bit it. Hmm. You know, maybe he didn't eat it. He just
maybe
bit
that's it.
It
that they bit
they just chomped it.
Definitely different for rainbows, though.
Yeah.
And I always equated that because of steelhead, you know, they're squid eaters and they eat a lot of soft, gooey shit. So they may not be as, I don't know, it's given a lot of credit for them thinking it's
they are just fish.
I don't know, but I mean, I've caught a lot of steelhead on a swing where I know they hit that from behind because I got push sheets on them.
Right.
And my fly goes upstream, my line goes slack, and it's like, oh, gotcha. And it changes. And so, I don't know, I agree with it, rainbows, though, dude, they're different.
Well, in the way that fish ate, too, I mean, I felt like two bumps, taps, something. Because I knew it was coming.
I saw it. You like called it out, like a tap or something.
And then all of a sudden, I mean, it was like my reel exploded and that fish is cartwheeling
Yeah.
downstream, which means it probably hit it going downstream or broadside across,
That's why I
right?
wonder if they go past it and they just look to just hit it by the head. And
Yeah.
I mean, you notice that when you're swinging for steelhead and or salmon or whatever, there's a lot of different types of eats. You
Tons.
know,
Yeah,
it's
and I think
just
I talked about it once, but going up to Lando with Chuck and staying on top of the cliff and watching,
yeah.
you know, that place is an aquarium. There's so many fish.
Yeah, they only plant like a 500,000 a year.
Yeah, so many finless rainbows. It looked like they ran into the wall. But watching fish like interact with this fly where they, you know, make multiple passes at it, almost like that brown did at my feet, where it's kind of like a
Well, that's why I wonder if
get out of my
they're looking for
zone.
the angle.
Yeah, looking for the angle, whatever this is, trying to scare it off, not sure what it is, and then just decide to hit it like a freight train. And that's that eat, you know, where the reel explodes. That
Yeah.
doesn't happen if they're eating it coming upstream.
No, go slack.
It's physics.
It's a tough one.
Yeah. All right, what else do you want to talk about?
I don't know.
Fishing. Let me pull up my list here. Sorry for the break. Once again, no computer down. Thanks a lot, Apple. Somebody talked to Steve Jobs for me. He's
Wasn't he
dead.
your neighbor?
Yeah, he was my dad. Ooh, hook sets on spey rods.
Wrong guy.
A lot of steelhead. Well, not necessarily spey rods, but when swinging.
Steelhead wise or trout wise? See, I don't trout spey, and I will probably start maybe this year because I got so many of you guys doing it. Might be fun for me too,
Well, did you see the comment saying about your shoulder? Did you ever think about fishing a switch rod?
yeah.
Pretty sure you thought about it.
Yeah, I designed, I think, the first switch rod ever for Powell Rods. 19. I gave it to my son-in-law.
Nice.
I've showed you that, right?
Yeah,
Yeah.
yeah.
I can't remember what year it was. I think it was before anybody had a, we didn't call it a switch. It was a, I designed that rod. It was a 11-foot reverse 6-7 with a short detachable fighting butt about that long. And I designed it for Nancy Shealy because we did so much indicator fishing. And I could get her, you know, we were spey fishing, but the rods were gigantic and way too big for where we were. And so I had them make me this little, we talked about it, and they said, well, it's kind of like a trout spey. But there was no such thing. We didn't call it that. It was
Right.
Press Powell said that. It was Powell Rods that did it. And I can't remember what year it is, but I think it was 90. 89, 90, something like that. And it was called the Troutsman. That was the name of my shop.
Yeah.
And I actually had a buddy that I sold one to, and he came out and told me how he had this trout rod. And I lost all mine. And I don't know, gave them to people or what I did. And they quit making, you know, Powell sold off and went to, they sold, Prescott out of it. And so Jim Dreve showed up, and I says, I'll give you $1,000 and any rod in the shop for that rod. It's a terrible trout rod, right? And he fished everything. And so I gave him $1,000
Yeah.
and a new Scott. And it was worth it, right? And I got the rod because it was the first one, and did a lot with that for steelhead. I mean,
Yeah.
I fished it all the time because it was just like this little short single spey, out it goes. And now Wes has got it, my son-in-law, so it's pretty, him and Todd are always fishing up at Lando and swinging. And so I gave it to him, and I said, you fit? I just told him, are you fishing that thing? He goes, yeah, I love it. I says, yeah, shit. I was hoping he'd say, no, it's not bad. So give it back
Yeah.
to me. Because it would be, but yeah, that was kind of the calling card of, I think that's why spey fishing took off the way it did. Everybody got old. I mean, watch McGuane's thing about when he's talking with Andy. He's talking about fishing single hands, and he said, just wore out, you
Yeah.
know, went to the spey thing. Everybody said it back then. Mike, everybody did it. everybody thought it was going to be awful, that they have to learn, and then it, you know, you just, they're into it. But it as far as swing wise, to me, on the hook set, that's where we got to started. I mean, for me, it was a lift, right? It's in it, but you get so many different, you feel things down there because you're static. You are tight to it. You're never, I mean, I used to tell people, if you're worth a shit, you can tell the difference between a willow leaf and a maple leaf touching your fly. Because you'll know the difference, right? And when to set, when not to, and when, I mean, most people overset in the beginning. The fish has to close down on it. If he came from behind it, his mouth's open, he push eats you, if he doesn't get a chance to turn his head, you're probably, he's going to feel that and open his mouth. If he doesn't close his mouth and turn his head, you got a poor chance
of in trouble.
I watched Harry Lemire one time hooking a fish, and his deliberation was so precise. It was, I could almost see the fish eating and before he set, and it was on the Kispiox, and I watched him, and it was like he just picked up his rod, and he was just like so smooth, so no craziness, nothing, just and dead on to that fish instantly.
Calm.
Just totally. Yeah. He's like freaking John Wayne. I mean, he was just so, I was talking about that, I don't know what podcast we did, we were talking about that, about when we were talking about going up to BC to do this thing, and I finally got a steelhead book, right? Chris got one, because I still haven't found mine. I missed so many people in that, but there must be 20 guys in the book. I remembered being like six, right? Because of the guys I knew.
Yeah.
And the rest of the guys who were, and one of them was Harry Lemire. I completely forgot about all those superstar guys in that book. I mean, so many guys.
Which book is this?
Steelhead.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, it's just, it's the
book.
Somebody told me that there was that one that they consider, oh, Chris told me, he says, you know, online they call it Deck Hogan's book. He says, they call Steelhead the first Old Testament, and Deck Hogan's is the New Testament. That's so cool. Because it was considered the Bible of all steelhead fishing when it came out. And so, I mean, there were so many guys, and I felt, as soon as I started reading it, that was one of those, when I was sitting and looking at my books, and I was like, oh my God, I called out about five guys, like that was the end of it. And there's, I bet you there's 20.
Yeah.
And some of the guys were really famous. I mean, a lot of the guys were kind of West Coaster, you know, Seattle and that area and that stuff. And they're dot fly designers and stuff like that. But I felt like a total schmuck after I realized, I don't think I'd looked at that book in 20 years, maybe more. And because I knew the six, seven guys that I called out, I thought that was the end of the book.
Right.
Yeah, but set on the, I don't know how you would ever, it's just a lift, you know?
So many people
But what I was getting at before I finish this, I could do a lot better on a single hand. I could talk about single hand hits, but nobody single hands anymore. I don't even know if they know that we did that. I mean, you know, in the Old Testament, when we did do it, but now with the spay, it appears to me that everybody is the same. They just lift, they just have a bigger, you know, tool that's lifting more line. But it looks to me like it's still pretty much the same. It's deliberate, and it's not, it's definitely not how I set for trout.
Very different. So
you just kind of sit there and let it get tight, look to it.
My set's more similar to your trout set, but it's not really much of a set at all. I fooled around with a lot of different methods. You know, some people love holding a loop. I think it's different for trout versus steelhead, how you were, because they behave
somewhat differently. I never looped a steelhead.
A lot of guys do that now. They carry loops because they want them to be able to pull that until they're sure they want it.
But again, I'm a single handing.
Right.
There were times when you have to let them feel those. There's a very big difference between a fish that eats from the side and one that comes from behind it.
Yeah.
That the side, there's just no wonder. It's like you say, the reel takes off. It's like, yeah. Oh, shit, you know, here it is. He's gone. And but that one, that push sheet where they come from below it, where you're feeling it, It's like they have to get a hold of that fly.
Yeah.
And that's where the loop. I never had a problem with that swinging ever. I had a problem not setting the hook on dry flies. Mm-hmm. Because I really, my very first one, I mean, I'd ever seen in my life. That's one of the mics they thought I got hit by a bear. That one, I knew what I was supposed to do. My body did not allow it.
Oh, yeah.
And I got it, right? Which was a bad thing because. Yeah.
Negative reinforcement is what that's called.
Well, my first two or three I got.
Yeah.
And I said, but I think I was lucky because each one I said, I tried to be more deliberate and wait. And then my next three or four, I didn't get, and I was beating them. And that, I don't think I ever tried slip striking on those. I just had to wait. I remember one in particular, it ate probably, I don't know, five times. On one swing, and it's just pushing behind it, and yeah. It would push my fly almost like its head would come up and push it and push it on a wave. I can see his mouth not open, and I didn't set. And that's when I realized that okay, I'm broke. I'm where I belong, and I'm trying to control my V, my wake, and not accelerate that wake and keep that fish tracking and keep coming at it. And then I saw his head go underwater. And at the same time, with my fly, mm-hmm. And at the same time, I felt a little weight, and I just stopped my swing, right? Just barely picked up, and it was all hell broke loose. And then that became the game.
Yeah.
Controlling it, like Scotty Howell does that thing where he's hookless, right? And so you get a lot less. I wish I would have seen that bit. Well, he was kidding then, but wish I'd have seen that then.
Yeah.
Because it would have been kind of interesting to see if you could control yourself to not overset on a freaking head comes up, dude. It's huge. It just looks like another.
It looks like a 40-pound
fish.
It
does. Every single 10-pound fish looks like it's 30 pounds. And you're like, and but that became the game to me, to see if I could control it, you know, without setting up and. I don't know. It was the best. I think it's the hardest thing I ever had to learn in fly fishing.
Oh, it took years for me to beat that out of my system. I mean, I finally did where now I can, my method is I don't hold a loop. When I get an eat, I keep it pointed at them until I'm sure they're running with it.
That's subsurface though, right?
Yeah. And then I'm always down to the side, the bank side, ideally, just low and down.
I just go away from whichever their head is. Whichever angle I am, I'm going away from it.
Yeah, the subsurface is hard to tell, so I always, you know. But that way you introduce shock absorption.
But if I cast to the right side, I just hook to the left.
Yeah.
And vice versa when it's subsurface. When it's on this, and on the surface, I actually tried to lift my line up. I didn't, I wanted to try to get my line. I'd just go up and off. I don't know why. It's just maybe it was trout set in a way, but same thing, I think. I don't know. It's been a long time since I played that game.
They're
supposed to have fixed that this year, but we didn't.
Yeah. Well, maybe next year. I fixed it this year.
Yes. I care about that.
I did quite a bit. It was fun. I remember having one up in Alaska where I'm turning around talking to my brother, maybe, I can't remember, but I'm swinging across. No, it was Adam, fish hound. I'm swinging across and, you know, I've gone 3 days without a fish. Everybody else is on the board. Everybody else is nymphing beads. I'm swinging and I'm just bullshitting with him. We'd had a beer at lunch, whatever, hanging out. And I'm kind of looking at him talking in mid sentence. I go, that was a fish. He goes, what? I go, that was a fish again. And then I'm just looking at him, you know, with my rod left, and then it ate and just and I was proud of myself because I knew I'd finally beat that like feel something react out of my system where I could just sit and let that fish eat it. And it was a great hen. It was fun.
If you're a mouser, you really need to learn that. If you're going to, particularly night mousing, you have to learn that. Day mousing, they tend to eat it, or day frogging. But if you night it, they will mess with their food.
Yeah.
They will play with it. And so you gotta, although I think most of the time they blow it up. They blow it right out of the water.
Well, it's similar. I was thinking the same, the steelhead eat, mousing, dry fly eats. There is no cooler feeling in the world than being calm, cool, and collected on a cool eat, right? Where that you see that fish's mouth open, you let them close it and take it down, and then you just do that slow. That's cool.
Practice.
Yeah, practice.
You have to be...
Go fishing.
You have to get it out of your system. Don't lose control, period.
Deep breaths are good. All right, well, I think that's a great spot. Did you say breathe or read?
Either for you.
Yeah, I'm learning to read still. 27. One day, maybe. All right, well, that's a great spot to end. What show is this? I can't remember. 15, maybe?
16, maybe.
15, 16, something like that. It'll say on the title, so we'll know then. But thanks for watching. And Tuesdays, 10 a.m., leave comments below. Go to our online website. All the guys down in Ennis, see if I can get them all. Chris, Jake, Matt, Chuck, Kahana, Johnny.
Johnny didn't count.
Johnny doesn't count. They're all doing a great job making sure our website's up to date. Everything's fully stocked. I mean, we've got...
Take a look at all that new full-in stuff.
Yeah, all the full-in stuff.
I'm going to do things on all of it. They did a couple things I think were really dumb when they did this. But one of them, they call their chenille egg yarn or egg chenille or something. Like it's all for eggs.
Interesting.
It's the biggest... It has more colors and more things... I'm not sure why they said that because I didn't know they really fish that much egg stuff, but it's not for eggs at all. I mean, I guess you could use it for that, but the color spectrum, and I'm going to feature a bunch of this stuff because we just got it in. I'm going to shoot a video about this stuff in a few minutes, but there's three or four products in particular, but their bunny strip is absolutely stunning. And it's slightly different sizes than the traditional stuff that we got, the Magnum and the regular. It's just a little bigger on one, a little smaller on the other. But their micro strips are unripped, but the colors of them are so clean. And then that chenille, there's just so many of them. And I don't know why you'd call it egg chenille. I mean,
to talk to somebody.
I know, but there's just, you need to go look at it because they've done I brought this up earlier. That wasn't why I was here with time with it, but they've got a bunch of dubbing stuff too, but take a look at it because it's really, in particular ones I talked about, I mean, there's so much. We brought just a ton of the stuff in, but in particular, look at those bunnies. Those bunnies the strips are just perfect. They're all hanging, so there's none of that gobbed up crap when you get it and it's all twisted and you get get it wet to make it look like it's what it's going to look like. But take a look at that chenille. And then the brushes, I'm going to talk about these. I'm going to do a little thing about it in a minute. But the number of brushes that we got in was staggering. And the color spectrum is unbelievable. And so, and the sizes and all that stuff.
Yeah, great trout sizes.
We didn't really, we put it on the site, but we didn't really say anything about it. No. And it's all new. Fully Mills, it's a European company, so... brought in a lot of their stuff this year. We've always had some, but this year we went full on it. We don't have it up here, so I was looking around to see if there's here, but it's all at the other store right now. We're not open up here right now, so take a peek. I think you're going to like it, and their quantities are really generous. I think that's a really positive with these guys, so hope you liked it. See you next week.